Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and welcome to the program. As always, I'm joined by my excellent panel. From the City of Angels, we have well-known and well-respected attorney, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome. Any good legal stories for us this week?
Good legal stories. That's a contradiction in terms. No, I have legal stories, but none of them are good. And it's a pleasure to be back here again, Simon. Thank you very much.
It's always great to have you. And from the very center of the known universe, Youngstown, Ohio, we have author, activist, and bar owner, Sam Murphy. Sam, welcome.
Simon and the rest of the panel, it's a pleasure to be here. I set my clock back last Sunday, so I wouldn't have to redo it, and I knew it would be done after we got done with the show, and that's why I called in on time.
Perfect. How are the Browns doing today?
I don't know. They don't play till 4:30, and due to NFL scheduling, which is more difficult than the IRS or the NSA or whatever, the Steelers and the Patriots are on, and the Browns and the Ravens are not on. One of my distributors was kind enough to give me tickets to today's game. I said, hell no, I got to do a radio show. And I gave them to my stepdaughter and her boyfriend, and they could sit up at the lake and freeze their asses off and watch the new Browns kick the crap out of the old Browns.
Splendid.
That's what happened. A lot of people around here love. People think it's the Pittsburgh Browns rivalry, which is great. But it really, to a true Browns fan like myself, it is the old Browns versus the new Browns that is the bigger rivalry. But I'd rather be doing this show, talking to you guys, solving the world problems, than watching the NFL No Fun League play on Sundays.
I'm from the wilds of New Jersey. We're joined by my good friend, Bill Conrad. Bill, how are you doing?
I am fine. Thank you for asking, Simon. It's so good to be here. I missed last week, and I'm looking for a little excitement, and I'm hoping that we'll all live up to exciting the audience. Or inciting the audience, which is it?
Oh, I think inciting.
Okay.
when we were off air, or before we went on air, I should say, you know, in the green room period, Bill and I were discussing a late night radio program, Coast to Coast. Does anyone remember the name of the original host? The guy
Bell.
That... Art Bell, that's it. That's the name.
Cool.
He broadcast out of a double-wide trailer based in Pahrump, Arizona.
Did you ever see the movie? It was a terrible movie. It was a disaster flick that John Cusack was in a couple of years ago.
Yes.
I can't remember it, but Woody Harrelson had a cameo in it.
2012.
Yeah, and Woody Harrelson had a cameo in it when the world was coming to an end, and that was based on Art Bell. He lived in the trailer and all that stuff, and was broadcasting the end of the world stuff. And that was based on Art Bell. I listened to Coast to Coast for 10 straight years on Monday night when I work at the bar and come home around 4 or 5 in the morning. It's my last closeout.
There you go.
I love it. I'm going to tell you, there are some real whack jobs who call in, but there also are some pretty interesting callers and some really intelligent professors and other of those people, Nate, when they start talking about... there was a great... He had somebody on, the son or the daughter of the gentleman who wrote Chariots of the Gods. Are you all familiar with that book?
Yeah, about a German fellow.
Yeah, right. And he had one of his sons or daughters on. And that was a great book when it came out. And it always was, you know, about how the Easter Island statues got there, the pyramids, and, you know, all those interesting things that do make you kind of go, wow, because the guy approaches it in such an intelligent way that it does make you one of those things go, wow. Like, figure if the three of you could explain to me Stonehenge and how that happened and what it stands for, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Well,
that was prehistoric Lego.
There must have been some pretty big people playing that.
Yeah. I believe they were from Mars, from listening to one of the more recent shows, that they were very tall people, that Mars is actually a moon of a former planet that blew out of the orbit
show.
And is now the asteroid group. See? See, you know, what's really funny? I live 40 minutes outside of New York City, and I can't. Most of the AM talk shows are too fuzzy for me. But now they're WTAM 1100 Fox Radio comes clear as all can be. So I enjoy that when I'm driving home from work at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Now,
well, I mean, let's face it, Fox News, Art Bell, it's pretty much the same thing.
Oh, I think the radio's better. I think the radio's better. It's got to be.
No, it's the funny ones are some of the people who do call in. Those are the not some of the hosts. Some of the hosts are, you know, definitely should be in the loony bin. But the callers definitely should be in the some of the callers should definitely probably are calling from the loony bins.
Right.
Yeah. That's probably the only time they get time on the telephone, right? It's that time of night.
Then again, some of them may be members of Congress.
Well, you know, we also had that discussion before the show started, that some of these people are much more well-spoken than most of the politicians in the United States, which is really frightening because they make sense, and the people who are in politics or are helping direct our lives don't.
Good point. When was the last time anything useful came out of Washington, D.C.? I got to really think about that one. Sam, do you have any clue? Does your memory go back?
Came out of Washington, D.C.? Yeah, when they closed up for 16 days. It was great. nothing happened. I mean, the newest thing that just happened, I think Friday, Simon, and I think it's a terrible thing, is that 5 million Americans were kicked off the food stamp rolls. But because it was the first of the month, Ben Bernanke printed $94 billion for Wall Street banks. And if that doesn't sum up the how screwed up Washington, D.C. and our government is, nothing does. I mean, to me, that's the epitome of what's wrong with this country.
And Peter, you probably heard about you know, what happened with the SNAP program. There's something essentially wrong with this picture. You know, why are we still spending billions, you know, on the banks and sending billions to foreign countries that don't like us? And yet we can't feed our own people.
I don't know why, but I suspect the answer is that people who make decisions about where that money goes somehow or another, they benefit financially from the ultimate direction it takes. And they don't benefit as much financially by taking care of things like feeding people, per se. That's my best guess.
Yeah. Well, I think even worse, they're in denial.
I'm still trying to figure out how they built Stonehenge. I've been puzzling on that one ever since you mentioned it.
You know what? I think you're wrong. I don't see how any politician could actually build Stonehenge. I don't think they have the aptitude.
That's a lot of hot air. You never know.
It was hot air that raised those big blocks. Congress could create Stonehenge in a weekend.
No, yeah, they could raise build, it. I don't think they could create it.
They could create it in a weekend and build $1 billion for it.
Well, yeah. You know, plus, you know, there'd be some pork henge.
Well.
They'd be building a bridge to Stonehenge.
Wow. I bet they could hook it up to the tunnel, right?
Right.
Well, you know, I truly hope that these theorists who believe that Stonehenge was built by aliens and that the Eastern Island statues were built by aliens and crop circles and pyramids were built by aliens, I truly hope they're right because, you know, we're all going to need a little help from the outside world in the not-too-distant future, in my opinion.
I've got nothing against aliens.
Well, we may need somebody to bail us all out. They were kind enough to come down here and help us build all these great structures, then hopefully they'll be kind enough to save us from ourselves.
Well, odd really.
Wow.
You know, if they helped us this much, how come they didn't bail the banks and GM out?
Well, it's because we... Oh, I'm sorry. I know the answer to that one.
Carry on.
It's because the federal government got a hold of them and they locked them in Area 42 and they've got all the answers, but they're locked up and they're waiting for a bill to be passed in order to come out and talk about it.
I think you mean Area 51.
Yeah, no, 51. It's infamous. No, it's 42.
42.
Nobody knows about 42. 51, they've switched the signs on the buildings.
Oh.
It's a cover-up.
I believe it.
Well, you've let the cat out of the bag now. Now everybody knows.
Well,
I know. I won't be here next week. This is
it.
I'm going to be locked up with them.
Bob is listening in right now. I don't know who your NSA agent name is, Bill. My name is Bob. He contacted me during this government shutdown. He needed a handout.
Okay. Well, let's, fun though this is to discuss. Well, let's move on to something slightly more serious. I'd like to talk about Benghazi. It was well over a year ago, September the 11th. The attack on the embassy, it seems to be a story that won't go away. And who the hell is rattling pots in the background?
Not me.
Somebody's making something with tinfoil, William.
Right.
Oh.
He's back. You just took a kitchen break, you could tell.
Chex Mix.
That's what that was, the sound of cereal pouring into a bowl.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, it's good for you too, my friend. And these shows get you really worked, they get your metabolism worked up. You get hunger pangs while you're doing them.
Well, and sometimes I don't share enough, so apparently I seem to be up to share.
Well, good for you. Chex Mix is a good choice. Now, what kind of milk did we use? Whole milk?
Oh, no,
1%?
No. It's the Chex Mix. You know,
it
doesn't have the milk. It's this party mix.
Thing.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that.
Yeah. This one actually has little vanilla cookies in it. They're really good.
Oh my goodness! Hey, I'm getting hungry now. I'm going to take a break and get some Chex Mix. All right. Benghazi, it's been a year. It can wait. All right. It's not going anywhere.
Well, okay.
Okay, but back to the plot here, guys. Let's talk Benghazi. And I'm going to go around the table just to see how unfair I can be. I'm going to start with you, Peter.
You're starting with the weakest link. That's a smart move. Save your closer for last, Sam.
What is your recollection of what happened? I haven't shared anything with you.
If you're talking about a year ago and you're talking about the embassy attack, I don't remember all the details of the embassy attack, except that it was a very unfortunate event and, people died. I think that there are many people who believe that there was some sort of conspiracy to let that happen, and I've never been persuaded that that was the case, but I haven't studied it extensively, I've heard these theories all the time that somehow our government let these things happen and had some sort of incentive to do so. And as a general rule, I don't believe in such conspiracies. I'm not saying they're not, it's not possible, but I think the burden of proof is on the conspiracy theorists. And other than that, I really don't know what to say about it. It's another in a long line of tragic events that, are constantly recurring.
Let's take the Chex Mix off the table.
He can't hear you. He's eating Chex Mix.
No, I can hear. Yeah.
No, Peter, the initial report claimed that it was a bunch of rowdies that were, all upset, bent out of shape over a YouTube video. Did you buy that from at all?
Well, one of the things that I think people like to do is they like to say this was the cause and this was not the cause, and there was only one cause and there weren't other causes. And I've learned to believe that there are multiple causes of things. And I don't know precisely what effect that video had, but I couldn't say that it didn't have some effect on inciting people at the time. So I'm not entirely persuaded that the video was the what was really a touchstone event that set it off. No, I'm not. But I couldn't say that I would completely rule it out either. I mean, there does seem to have been some semblance of a mob mentality at the time.
That's great. That is actually the answer I was looking for. I'm going to ask Phil to put his Chex Mix down and tell us what he recalls of the Benghazi affair.
Well, the thing that impressed me about this whole situation was that it didn't seem like it was very well guarded, and that when they notified the people in our government that they were being attacked, it seems like our government ignored them, which is kind of unusual to have that. This is the compound to protect the whole facility, that they only had, again, depending on what story you hear, we hear that they had pistols to guard a compound, and that they were attacked with people with missiles. And what's kind of confusing is that why did we allow this? And now that it's come back into this, there are so many stories about this that there's no semblance of truth here anymore, which is kind of scary that we're just kind of giving in to hearsay to make no one credible, not our government, not the news agencies. There's something really wrong here, and it bothers me that there is no answer. I mean, you'd think in a compound you'd have a few more videos of what took place, and they're saying that the YouTube video is in dispute, that it was staged in a some people are saying it was staged in a studio. So what are we to believe anymore? I'm confused.
Okay. Sam, I shared some information with you.
Yes.
Combining what you what you recall at the time, you know, together
with what
you're reading.
Before I want a couple comments, and I want to thank you for sharing me with that information. I've only read a little bit about it, and I intend to read more. It's mind-boggling, and because it comes afterwards, it really fills you in on what's been missing. Peter, I don't think this will go away. For one reason and one reason only, no one knows what the truth is at this point. Until we get to find out what the truth is, then this thing will go away. And the problem is, I don't know if we're ever going to get to that point, because I think the truth is going to damage some people's political careers. And that's what this is all about, saving people, and especially Hillary Clinton. I think the reaction back then was crazy, that a video would get a bunch of street thugs riled up to go storm a U.S. compound and then take it down. And that was crazy back then. It's even crazier today. Back then I thought it was a big mistake when Obama went into Libya. We did invade Libya via the air, everybody. Everyone forget that. Gaddafi was the bad guy. He had to go. He's bad. We have to get this to support the Arab Spring that's going over so well. And the United States backed the militia, I don't know which one, through air power. And so did NATO, but really it was us. I think French sent one plane over, and the Brits sent the plane over. But anyway, that allowed this guy Stevens, who was the ambassador, was murdered, as were the three other soldiers. And from what Simon has sent me, and I never knew this, there was almost 50 other Americans almost killed that night. And luckily, they got out. Through heroic efforts of other people who hopefully will be paraded in front of Washington and be allowed to tell the truth, and let the American people decide who the cover-up was. Because what I also have learned, and now with what Simon has sent me and other things that I've read, is that I am amazed at what politicians and their friends in the media will do to protect themselves and their little circle of friends from things of this nature. It's mind-boggling what the American media and those in power around Obama, because they did it for Bush over Pat Tillman, or I think it was, and they've done it here for Benghazi, for Obama, will do to protect their interest. And there's four Americans dead, could have been more, and it's a sad thing. I hope that the truth gets out, and those punishable should be brought to justice. I'm not just talking about the ones who led the raid. We do drone strikes in Pakistan. Why aren't we taking out these people in Libya who killed four Americans? I don't understand that at all. These drones are supposed to be great. They spy all over us. We all know that. We spy on foreign leaders. We spy on their phones. Yet we don't know who these guys are in Libya who took out four people. I think a lot of people don't want these people brought to justice because they're afraid of what I just said. It will derail Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential aspirations. It will also be a huge black mark against Obama as a president.
And what is your theory about what happened? Is it just a case of extreme negligence, or is it something more?
I think negligence is part of it. I really believe that, I've only read a little bit of what Simon has sent me and some other things of my own reading. Obviously, when you only, if you see a United States embassy, have you ever been to an embassy? Peter, I'm sure you've been to embassies, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Okay, how about you, Bill? Have you been to embassies? You ever been to the United States embassy anywhere?
No, I have not.
Okay. I only know about it. I've never been to one. My son, Josh, who's in the Air Force Air Security, had been stationed at one for a while, so I only know because of what he said. It is, and he was in Central America. where it wasn't, you know, and the Heat was guarded to the teeth. He was, I mean, he himself was a walking battalion, okay, and he and it was amazing what he told me how the security was. Rightfully so, you know, we're in a foreign country, you should have security there, etc. Benghazi was like the embassy, they were looking at it, they weren't responding to things, so I think it was negligence on the security, someone has to pay for that. I also think they thought, again, this is the thing of what you kept bringing up to them when we were going to go to war in Syria. Who are these rebels? Who are the good guys? I think they thought, oh, we took out the Obama administration and whoever was the secretary, Hillary, said, hey, we helped topple Gaddafi, everyone's going to love us. Well, that's not the case. The rebels that we helped and got weapons decided we hate Americans too. We had, you know, and they felt like now they got access to weapons and they were going to teach us a lesson. Obviously, it's on 9-1-1. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, yeah. Everybody on 9-1-1, any American anywhere across the world on 9-1-1 has to be, until the war on terror is over, has to be on their guard when that date comes around. And here
that's
we were
right.
Now.
Well, it seems negligent that they didn't do anything to beef up the security at a lot of the places that might have been a little bit deficient.
Right.
Isn't that normal?
You have that. You, just because you have four Navy SEALs there, and all power to our military that protects these embassies all across the world and local and in our country. When you have a battalion of Al-Qaeda affiliated thugs armed to the teeth. These guys didn't have stones and sticks and stones. They had, you know, rocket-propelled grenades. They had the proverbial 50 caliber machine gun on a land. And by the way, I got a question for you three. Is Toyota the car truck of choice for terrorists when they're attacking us?
It makes for a great platform for machine gun.
What is it
just
with
so
them?
You
they,
know,
always
Sam,
they always
I,
have Toyotas.
I don't know the answer to this question. I do know that Toyotas, I heard once before, were the most commonly stolen vehicles anywhere.
Anyway, so I think to answer your question, yes, it definitely was lots of security.
Well, look, whenever any of these incidents occur, these acts of terrorism, hindsight is always 20/20, and it's always negligent. I mean, whether it be 9-1-1, whether it be it's not an act of terrorism, of course, but the Pat Tillman situation that you raised, Benghazi, what have you, the USS Cole, and you just said it yourself. You said it that every year at 9-1-1, everybody has to be on high alert. Well, that's everybody in the world, everywhere. And it seems to me that when your adversary decides that they're going to attack a specific place and you're trying to guard every place and you're getting intelligence reports that are indicating that every place is susceptible, it's impossible to know where the attack is going to manifest itself. And hindsight is always 20/20. But to the extent that we're saying that this is negligence, you could probably make the case that it was negligent not to see that this was a specific site where they were going to do this specific thing. I'm not sure how credible that is, but, you know, that's certainly an argument.
But to go beyond that
and suggest that there's some sort of conspiracy to allow this to happen, that's my
point. I disagree with you. I agree with you. I agree with you on that one. There was they didn't want this to happen. But once it did happen, the excuse they came up with is poppycock.
It's nothing unusual in politics or the military for people to start scrambling and engaging in spin operations and misinformation. I mean, you mentioned Pat Tillman a while ago. I mean, it was a long time before they admitted that they had shot one of their own.
This wasn't the Grassy Knoll and John F. Kennedy. Okay, it happened almost live on television, as things can happen today. And I think because the Obama administration and Hillary, again, because of politics, and listen, I read the thing on the whole that documentary on Pat Tillman. That was an incredible cover-up, too. And that was done by the Bush administration.
But it's just that's just human nature. That happens everywhere in every walk of life.
You know, when people are losing their lives, we can't, especially the ones who were on the front line. Pat Tillman wasn't killed in Iceland. Benghazi wasn't in France. What I'm trying to say is they were killed in war zones. The Middle East, Libya is a war zone. It still is right now. I think the big cover-up, political cover-up, comes from the fact is that the Obama administration did an end-around on Congress, and they supported the quote-unquote good guys because they were taking out Gaddafi, and the good guys turned out to be bad guys. And I think the only good thing that came out of these four Americans dying is we didn't do the same damn thing in Syria. But the only good thing that happened is that people did put a stop sign up in Washington and said, whoa, we don't need another Benghazi happening in Syria because we don't know who these rebels are. So those four Americans who were slaughtered at least helped other Americans and other people probably from being slaughtered in Syria, because Syria was going to be the sequel to Libya. We don't know who we're supporting. And it's just too bad that the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton, political asses are more important than what the truth is. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get to the truth of this, because people should be held accountable. That's what they're elected for. That's what they get paid millions of dollars for. That's why they get the right books. That they get $1 million advances. You know, they want all the good stuff when they make all these great decisions and wonderful decisions and this and that. But you know what? When they fuck up, they got to be held accountable. They don't want
They are accountable. They're accountable by way of the political process, which is this exact thing you're talking about.
That process was lied, Peter. The truth of Benghazi has not come up. We're still talking about it today.
But your point is simply this. We all agree that whatever happened, nobody intended it for happen. And the second point is people who want to blame the administration will blame the administration no matter what you tell them. And that's it. That's political accountability.
Yeah,
but
wait a minute. The truth was not brought out. The truth was not brought out.
It almost never is in these kinds of situations.
Why aren't the eyewitnesses being brought forward? And like I said, they haven't been brought forward. They have not seen us.
Brought forward, and they may never be brought forward. So
why?
What are we going to do about it?
That's where the conspiracy comes in, Peter. And I'm not saying there is one. But I hate cover-ups. I've had enough cover-ups since Richard Nixon.
Nobody likes a cover-up, but cover-ups are part of human nature. Everyone in these positions does it.
But that's not what's happening in democracy, are we?
I just don't know what you want.
My God, I can't even get a website. By the way, was the best thing this last week, the Health and Human Services Secretary getting a book, Website for Dummies?
Yes, it was. But I want to stick on Benghazi for a moment.
Sorry about that.
And Sam,
we love you. Love means never having to say you're sorry. So don't you worry about it.
I just can't resist. But you know, and I love you guys too. But Peter, I just can't deal. You know what? In today's modern world, the cover-ups are even worse. And you would think they'd be better. But you know what really makes me – I really long for – where is Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein in today's media? Where are they? I'm not talking about the guys in the Washington Post who dug up all that stuff, all the crap that Nixon and his cronies pulled. Why aren't they in the media anymore? Why don't these people care about getting to the truth and using the press for what it is instead of being the press being a trumpet for – this administration and a trumpet for that administration? You know, no wonder the American people don't care. They'd rather watch Honey Boo Boo.
I need to interject here. All right. Let me explain the security situation at the Benghazi mission. Peter, you talked about U.S. embassies. Sam, you talked about U.S. embassies, you know, how well protected they are. The mission, it wasn't actually an embassy. It was a mission. The security force consisted of a small number of Libyan civilians that were unarmed, four guys from the February 17th Brigade, that's one of the rebel groups, that were armed to the teeth, but couldn't even load a magazine into their armaments. And at the first sign of trouble, ran away. And three U.S. what is called RSOs, regional security officers, and against a whole bunch of people. I don't call that security. Do you? Peter?
I would call it failed security, inadequate security. And as if we needed any evidence that security was inadequate at that facility. I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
Okay.
I think there's an impression that at every single one of these complexes throughout the world, there needs to be some massive security presence, some military security presence on call 24/7, 365. And I just don't know if that is a practical reality, if that's the way it's conducted. I honestly don't know. I mean, going to one U.S. embassy in one part of the world gives you some insight into that embassy, but it doesn't tell you about any of the other, you know, hundreds of embassies or missions or consulates or various degrees of facilities that we're talking about here. Obviously, someone at some level made a decision that this place didn't need greater security than it had.
Okay.
And obviously that decision was incorrect.
Yes. Can I say something?
Wait a minute. Okay, yes, you can.
Thank you. One of the things that I read this morning, and I'm looking over the internet and I cannot find it, is that even though there was a low level of security, my understanding is that a call went out to ask for someone to scramble some jets or get some troops or to help them because they were under attack and we didn't respond. So even if you say that the levels of security were appropriate for perceived vulnerability, nobody responded to their cries of help.
Secondly, and you want to know something, William?
The
exact same report was made about Pearl Harbor, that there were radio dispatchers off-site at Pearl Harbor who said Japanese planes are incoming, and people just didn't think that was correct. So this has gone on. It happens all the time. It happens throughout history. People are convinced that some facility is secure or safe or some event is not going to happen, and there's somebody who says, hey, it's happening, and somebody up the command says, no, I don't think that's really happening. I can't explain why it happens. It happens all the time in every walk of life.
So chances are there's an awful lot of places in the world where the security is equally protected or unprotected, and
I
we're really in a vulnerable situation, and
that's
probably
true on
part
our own
where there's secret
turf,
talks.
Right here, right now, right where we live and work and breathe and eat every single day, that's true here, right here, now.
And you think that's part
of
the reason?
Everybody deals with throughout the world every single day.
You think that's part of the reason?
I live a few miles from LAX, and some guy just walked in with an assault rifle and shot a TSA guard. I mean, this is the world we live in. You go to a Boston Marathon, you could get blown up. You send your kids to grade school, they could get shot to pieces. The whole world is under attack. The whole world is in jeopardy. I don't think anyone could ever say, this is a safe place, this is the adequate amount of security, this is what we're supposed to do, this is right, this is wrong. I mean, it's happening everywhere.
All right. What you're failing to grasp here is that there were only four Americans in the Benghazi compound. However, as Sam rightly pointed out, you know, almost 50 Americans stood to die. And the reason for that was a mile away was a secret CIA compound, which incidentally got attacked. Fortunately, most of the people got away scot-free, but they were attacked by mortars. Now, it's pretty tough to aim mortars, you know, and hit the target unless you've got absolute GPS coordinates. And guess what? On the morning of the attack, a gentleman dressed in Libyan police, you know, regalia was spotted taking photographs. So, what do you make of that, Peter?
Let me ask you, Simon, what do you make of that? Those are a list of facts that, viewed in hindsight, clearly indicate that this place was going to be attacked. But in hindsight, we know it was attacked. So, I mean, again, it comes down to the same thing over and over and over again, no matter how many different ways we spin it. Somebody just didn't think that this was going to happen, and it did. And that's the way it always is. Wherever these things occur, whenever they occur, however they occur, I believe it's because somebody didn't think that was going to happen, and they were wrong. But that's the way it always is.
But this is all crass stupidity.
Well,
you know,
if you want to look at an isolated incident and just tune out the rest of the world, everything that else is going on, and focus on one point and say this was so incredibly stupid, that to me is a case of putting something under a microscope and tuning out everything else. And I don't think that leads to an accurate conclusion. I think you have to consider all the decisions that were made with respect to that particular location as part of an amalgam of decisions that were being made all over the world.
Sam, you know, hopefully you will agree with me. I mean, you know, security was a disaster.
Well, yeah, of course
Benghazi.
I do. And I,
but
I
think
I
everybody, everybody agrees with that. Everybody agrees with that. It was inadequate.
Yeah, but no, not just that. But this is a problem that resulted from the Obama administration going and embracing the Arab Spring without, you know, feet first, without looking about what to do. We helped topple a government, the Gaddafi government, okay? We toppled him. We took him out. He's dead. We took the side of the rebels. That was a good thing. Democracy was coming. Different sort of nation building the non-George Bush way, okay? And we did that, and then Libya was still is an open territory. It's like the American West. Everybody's out there. Every town is a different town, run by militia, this militia, that militia. There's no central government, or if there is, I've never heard of it. And yet we're trying to make friends with everybody. Unfortunately, where our mission was, where our compound was, whatever you wanted to call it, or embassy, obviously there was lack of security because people thought, and again, I really believe that the Obama administration thought, hey, we took out Gaddafi, we helped free these people, they're going to love us, it's going to be like liberators in World War II. They're going to throw kisses and hugs our way because we liberated them from the evil Gaddafi. And that's not what happened. They hate us more than Gaddafi did, and that's obvious. And they'll do it again when they're given a chance. They'll do it again. But what pisses me off the most, and it did over a year ago, and it still does today, is that when those bodies came home, that the President of the United States and the Secretary of State, who want to be the President of the United States in 2016, lied. Not that they screwed up on, they made bad decisions, Peter. We all do. Okay, I understand that. But don't be blaming it on a video. That's what I'm pissed off the most about. They blamed it on a YouTube video that has nothing to do with that.
Angry.
You can call that spin. You can call that. That's okay. That's no different.
Do you really think the Secretary of State looks at the big board and says all the places all over the world, and she says or he says or whoever the heck is in
that
position?
We don't know what
they say. Okay, I only want this in Benghazi.
Well,
this is all I want in Benghazi.
Well, they spend more time spying on the bad guys than they did on our own people.
They don't
micromanage
those details. They don't micromanage those details. There's a whole hierarchy of authority.
Bullshit, you can't. I totally disagree with that. You're the President of the United States. You're the most powerful nation in the world. You've got in technology.
You really think that's what happens?
They do it.
No, listen to me, Sam. I didn't say you couldn't. I said they don't. If somebody because there's 8,000 decisions that have to be made every day. They don't micromanage them.
They shouldn't be that they don't want to make those decisions.
Do you
today.
Think Ronald Reagan made those kinds of decisions?
No, Ronald Reagan screwed up too.
You think George W. Bush made those kinds? Nobody does. There's a hierarchy. There are people in place.
You think a pretty negative picture.
Do you think the head of a large corporation makes every single micromanaged decision throughout the entire global enterprise?
When
it doesn't happen that
life?
Way. That's reality.
The head of a large corporation, if he's going to go to Akron, Ohio, or wherever, has some people there that are going to make sure that he doesn't stay in a Motel 7. And
what does that have to do with what we're talking about?
Well, no, I'm going to disagree with you on that. I think
you always disagree.
You know,
that's fine.
I believe
I'm telling you,
if the corporate executive doesn't have a golden parachute, then he micromanages. If they got a golden parachute, they don't give a shit. So I'm going to answer your question. Yes, I do agree the point you make, a good point, that they don't micromanage. Maybe they need to, and it shouldn't be President of the United States.
You can't micromanage these details, Sam. I got news for you. You have a restaurant. You have a business. Do you micromanage every single detail?
I have to micromanage. Yeah, I do, unfortunately. You know
okay,
why?
Well, then
because
let
I go
me
out of
tell
business if I don't micromanage it.
Okay,
Listen to me, Sam.
Take your restaurant, multiply it by 1,000, spread it throughout the entire world.
You've got to have 1,000 people working for you who
are
know what the fuck they're doing.
Are you going to micromanage every detail in all those international
restaurant
locations?
If they hire the right people.
No,
well,
that's, you just
proved
my point.
They
can micromanage if they hire the right people, which means they hire people to delegate, and those people hire people to delegate. That's the way the world works, Sam.
I agree with you, but they don't. They don't in the political world, and that's what the problem is. The politics has to be changed so this shit doesn't happen anymore.
Talking about two different things. You're talking about two different things.
No, I'm not
you
talking
keep
about
changing,
one. No, because
keep
I go
changing
back to
the issue.
I go back to the thing that still pisses me off. Well, regardless of what spin you want to put on it, okay, they were
I'm
wrong.
I'm not putting
that,
any
that
spin
president
on it. I'm not
Hillary,
putting any spin on it.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't. If you're telling me that politicians lie and try to cover up...
So why should we accept that as people?
Don't. What are you going to do about it?
Well, get on the radio show and I'm going to scream.
That's
and
great.
I'm gonna lie
we have six people out
people
there listening who are going to take it to heart.
No, because this is the wrong. It's wrong whether a Republican does it. It's wrong whether a Democrat does it. And I got to tell you something, Peter. That could have been my kid.
When you told me a moment ago how are they accountable, this is how they're accountable. You just nailed it on the head. You get up there, you speak your mind.
No, they haven't been held accountable because this administration refuses to tell the truth. As always, they're the worst. This is the most crooked, corrupt administration when it comes to telling the truth to the American people. And their incompetence It shows, whether it's security in Benghazi or rolling out a website about Obamacare, they don't know their ass from their elbows. And this is what happens when you elect the type of people that we've elected to run this country. Republicans
okay.
do the same thing.
But
there's
hold
accountability.
On.
You just made them accountable, Sam. You just exercised your right, and you held them all accountable, and you tried them and convicted them. That's it. Good. Good job. Done.
Don't you want to see all the truth? Don't you want to, doesn't it bother you? Because, you know, Peter, this is what bothers me. That could have been my kid. That's what my son does.
Well, I can appreciate.
Where's the next
embassy
going to be?
Sam, you asked me two different questions now. You said, don't I want the truth? Let me tell you something about my experience trying to get to the truth. It's a function of a million different perspectives. You can spend forever looking at it. You get one point of view, you get another point of view, you get another
okay.
point of view, you get one other person.
But
I got news for you. If you want to chase
you,
the truth,
you
go ahead, but you could spend a lifetime
attorney,
chasing
you get to
it.
You separate witnesses, right? You get to get the truth. You get to grill those son of a bitches on the stand. We haven't seen the son of a bitches take the stand right.
You don't always get
stuff.
To grill. You don't always get to grill people on the stand. It's a myth. You can't always track down every witness.
What about
you can't always get them.
Do you get the truth in depositions?
No, you don't get the
okay.
truth in depositions.
So how do you, so
who thinks that?
Eventually
thinks
you find it out, don't you? And it goes to a jury. Well, the
no,
jury
what
is
you
the American
get,
people.
What you get, well, you're a juror, and you just weighed in and rendered your judgment. You've
I
already made
weighed,
up your
I've
mind. What other additional information
no,
do you need?
I've, only because.
You've passed judgment. You're done. You've concluded.
I not, yeah, no, I bet you I'd even pass judgment even harsher if the eyewitnesses were allowed to tell the truth.
You know, okay, maybe you would. I don't think so. I think you've reached
listen,
your conclusion.
Listen, I couldn't stand. Listen, Peter, when I found out the truth about Pat Tillman, it made me disgusted me. So
well, do you think those people
think
wanted
I'm
to admit that? They dragged their feet for weeks and months before
right.
they finally
and,
pulled
and,
it out
people,
of them. That was one
you know
person,
and
one
you're
place.
Right, people, so it happened to Pat Tillman. It happened to Ambassador Stevens. Who's next? Oh, we just
it happened.
Say,
it happened. It happened.
I'm not gonna
it happened in 9/11. They had reports that there were terrorist threats coming. They had advanced data that if
well,
people
well,
had
well, that's because Bill Clinton didn't take them out when he had a chance.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, it's just an endless
I
cycle.
I mean, again, I don't know. You know, and listen, if you, do you remember, you want to go back, you brought up Ronald Reagan. Who was the first person, and believe me, I'm not a big fan of Reagan and the Iran-Contra thing, who was the first person to ever testify to the American people about a terrorist threat by the name of Osama bin Laden? Does anybody remember? And it wasn't Art Bell.
I don't remember because I don't know, and I've never known.
Okay, he publicly, Oliver North.
Great, there you go. There's your hero.
No, I'm trying to tell you, he testified in front of Congress because they were talking about the Iran-Contra, and he had to have a surveillance system he would put in, his home and all this stuff, because bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, this is way before the Taliban took over Afghanistan and all this stuff, was threatening to kill him and all the things because of what he's been doing, what he was doing. I'm not condoning what he did by any stretch
of
the imagination.
All right, let's just run with that fact. Ollie North, according to what you recall, was the first guy who publicly got up there and testified in Congress. And he was testifying about a load of stuff at the time.
Right,
none
exactly.
of it directly related to bin Laden. And apparently, according to you, he specifically said, oh, and by the way, America, look out for Osama bin Laden. This is the guy you got to look out for. So what is your point from that?
What is my point? We don't look out for for whatever reason, Peter, with all this massive technology, weaponry, troops, soldiers, government, whatnot. Don't you think that we should be a little bit more on our guard in an embassy in a foreign country?
As far
just
as
out
I
the
can
leaders?
Tell, you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't. If you spy
so
on people and try to gather
so
intel.
So fuck it. So that's your attitude. Fuck it. It's
no,
going to happen.
You're not letting
Pearl
me
Harbor
finish.
Happened. You know,
no, as soon as you
coming,
say don't,
there's nothing
do
I can
think
do about it.
You say, no, listen to me. You say, don't you think we should be more on our guard? You're the same guy claiming that you think your privacy rights are being violated.
No, that's right.
You
am.
Say, don't you,
wait
don't
minute,
do this,
what
don't
does,
do that, don't spend money
NSA
here, don't spend money there, spend it here, do this,
what
do
does
that.
What does NSA spying on Americans
I mean,
have to do with having,
it's,
only, with having
it's
Libyan
hopeless.
Soldiers?
No
wait
matter
a minute.
What anybody does, it's not going to be enough.
That's not true. I disagree with you. I'm not telling people to spy.
It's not going to change anything.
We're not talking about spying. We're talking about, as Simon correctly pointed out, the people that we had, the local yokels that were guarding this compound, didn't know how to pull a trigger. So why would they hire it in the first place?
Well, what's your answer to that? You raised the issue. What do you think the answer is?
Probably because
shouldn't have been
because
they should not have been there in the first place.
So what do you conclude from that?
Well, someone
you guys raise issues,
up.
But you don't raise solutions. You just say this is fishy, this is bad, this is awful. In hindsight, yeah, it's all a big mess. But what's your point?
Oh, okay. My point is that I don't know how many ambassadors we have, but I'm sure that...
Okay, you don't know, but you're sure.
Okay, Peter.
somebody's playing lawyer today.
I'm playing logic. I mean, we're just talking about stuff.
Okay.
We're just pulling
right.
things out of thin air. I don't know what the point is.
Okay. I have no idea how many U.S. ambassadors there are. I'm guessing around 200, because we have something like 160 countries that we recognize. I'm pretty certain that the ambassador to the UK, for example, lives a pretty decent life and is well protected.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, wait. Let's all absorb that for a moment. Simon's contention is that the ambassador to the UK is well protected and lives a good life. Okay. I'll accept that. Okay. Keep going.
All right. However, J. Christopher Stevens, who incidentally was an excellent ambassador, knew more about the Middle East than almost anyone else, found himself completely unprotected.
At a mission in Benghazi. And your
point is
that they intentionally set him up to be killed?
Absolutely not.
Well, then obviously somebody made a mistake. I mean, we're all saying the same thing over and over and over again.
Okay. My point is that if you only have 200 people worldwide to protect, then it should
you really
be...
think that it's just a matter of protecting 200 people worldwide? Is that what you really believe?
No.
It's 265 current ambassadors.
That's it. Okay. You think it's just the ambassadors we have to protect. That's it?
Not
their staff, not the people, not the personnel everywhere, not all the people
Peter.
All over the...
Peter.
Well, you keep pointing to the mistakes and the negligence and the errors, and nobody's disputing that. But that's all you're doing.
Okay.
You're looking back in something in hindsight, and you're saying, all this was wrong, all this was wrong, all this was wrong. And, okay, fine, but where does that take us?
Well, what it does is it takes us to the future, and no one seems to want to talk about the future. Yeah, I'm going to... change gears just for a second. Look at what happened at LAX yesterday. You know what the pundits are saying? Oh, well, the way to fix the problem is move the magnetometers to the very front doors of the airport. Check everyone as they walk in. I don't see that as a sensible way forward.
Well, why not?
Oh, no.
Look, I walk into courthouses every day. I've got to walk through one of those things to get into a courthouse every day. I mean, obviously, a guy walked into an airport with an assault rifle. I mean, how else are they supposed to stop him?
Oh, okay. So you do that, and, well, that's a soft target gone hard. So what's the next soft target? Has to be a shopping mall.
You well, know, now, you... now you're playing the role of the guy who has to figure out how to protect everybody all the time. And I got news for you. You're going to keep finding soft targets. Every time you plug a hole, you're going to have another one.
I agree.
And so it's an impossible process.
So
I think the bottom line of what Simon is saying, and if I can interrupt here, Simon's saying this is a place where Ambassador was at. This is a place that should have had a good amount of security in a very volatile part of the world. If we're leaving these compromised, that's a real problem, and we need to have them relook at places where things are volatile by nature in that part of the world.
Okay,
we're not talking about putting the stuff at every gas station and every shopping mall. We're talking about a place that should have been more secure.
You've just enunciated the obvious fact that happens after this happens, and I got news for you. That's all wonderful and great, but that doesn't mean the next target is going to be one of these places.
Oh, absolutely not.
It won't. They'll shift.
But these are vulnerable.
Well,
this is a place that's vulnerable as a place where it should have been a diplomatic, protective place in a volatile part of the world. It was missed. I'm not talking about putting some... But so what are they doing about it? They're going to have some witnesses come in a closed session to talk about this whole thing, because I think they're very afraid that they're going to say, you know what, in most of the embassies and a lot of these great missions in volatile parts of the world, there isn't enough security there. I think that's what's going to happen behind closed doors, and they don't want the general public to find that out, as opposed to saying, we need to do something to fix it. We either need to hire more people, we need to shift at protection, we need to do something instead of the way we've been doing business as usual. We can't do this anymore.
Agreed. That's a non-controversial proposition. You said we obviously have something exposed here. We need to do something about it. I think everybody agrees with that.
Here's the really cute bit, right? Week of the 11th, that there's going to be some behind-closed-door hearings in Congress, but the only people invited are CIA agents that were on the ground. Now, I got something to tell you. It wasn't CIA agents on the ground. In the annex, you know, a mile away, that went to try and save the life of Christopher Stevens. It was PMCs. Private military contractors. And I have this on very good authority, like the best. Dylan Davis, who goes under the alias of Morgan Jones, has not been invited. Neither have any of the PMCs that were active in the annex. All right. What do you make of that? To me, it's going to be a joke. You know, the GOP want to obviously make a big deal out of Benghazi, but all they're going to get is a sanitized version from the CIA. Any comments on that, gentlemen?
Sounds like politics as usual. I mean, I know people are focused on Benghazi, but what I see in Benghazi is just a repeat of things that I see over and over and over and over and over and over and over again in every walk of life, everywhere. I see the same thing. I see mistake. I see denial, cover-up, anger. I see what are we going to do about it. I see some things happening, not happening. I mean, we had a bunch of kids shot up at a preschool in Connecticut. Nothing's been done to stop that in the future. I mean, it just keeps happening over and over and over again. I don't mean to treat these things lightly, but it's just a repeated process. It's just a different example, and it's what human beings do over and over and over again. I don't know how to fix it, solve it, diagnose it, address it, and it's not done. It's going to keep on going on.
Oh, absolutely, Sam. Your thoughts? It's going to be a CIA party?
Well, yeah, it's typical. You know, I agree with Peter. It's political bullshit, and they're taking a sweet time at rolling out the truth, which we never will know, because heads will roll. And these are people who would be living under bridges if they weren't bureaucrats or politicians. You know, they wouldn't know how to live. And they always get their hands out, and they're being taken care of by people. We all agree on that. Okay, we got, you know, the inmates are running the asylum, and they have been for a long time in this government, not just the Obama administration, but all our governments. We all know that, and it's a terrible thing because lives are lost and money is wasted. It doesn't get to where it's supposed to go. I guess my attitude is, Peter, I agree with you. You know, this stuff happens. I know you don't take it lightly. You're passion. You're a fighter. You're a man of the people. However, I come from a school of thought that we have, if we ignore history, whether it's Sandy Hook or Benghazi or Pearl Harbor, whatever you want to throw in, we're going to repeat it again. And we keep doing that, and we keep doing it because the right people aren't in charge. And it's almost like they want this stuff to continue to repeat itself because there's people making a lot of money off it that doesn't trickle down, to use that Ronald Reagan's favorite phrase, to what it's supposed to do, and changes don't take place. And the status quo has got to go. I mean, it's just been a terrible mess, of this world and this country. And I don't want a Benghazi to happen again. I feel bad for Ambassador Stevens, the people who wanted to rescue people, the other three Americans who were killed. I feel bad that, you know, people hate us. Why do people hate Americans? Well, we take sides. You know, we're not friends. Let's trade with everybody. If I was in Cuba, I'd hate Americans. You know, but you know what? Because we're not, you know, why aren't we trading with them and getting us all smoking Cuban cigars right now and things of that nature? You can't tell me because it's a communist country because we borrow money from the Chinese.
I agree with everything you've said. Here's the problem. The problem is that what needs to be done is objective reasoning, analysis, and resolution. Objective. But people aren't objective. Everybody brings to bear their own personal axe to grind, their own personal point of view, their own political agenda. You know, you know, if one administration does this, you beat them over the head over it. But if another administration does it, you don't beat them over the head as much. People are skewed and subjective. So when you try to pull people together to try to get resolution or anything, it turns into a personal slugfest, and it doesn't stop. It just keeps going. I see this in litigation. It's the same thing in litigation. You know, we just want to figure out what's going on here, but you can't because this, you can't do it in an objectively detached way because everybody starts interjecting their own personal points of view.
Okay, so what is the solution, Peter?
I've told everybody over and over and over again, I don't think there is any solution. I've been saying it from day one.
There is no solution. That's a fair answer.
Solution to what? You pick a problem, and I'll tell you it's just going to get bogged down like it always does.
And why does it get bogged down, in your opinion?
Well, pick an example, and I'll tell you. Let's talk about one. Let's just pick one, and we'll talk two or three.
Okay.
One. You know, Sandy Hook. I think that's a problem. I think it's really bad that a bunch of kids got shot to death with a mentally disturbed guy who had free and access to assault weapons. Nothing's going to be done about that because it's too mired down in political controversy. Any effort you make to try to address that, if it rubs the NRA and the gun establishment the wrong way, it'll just get killed. Okay, easy diagnosis, simple thing. Now let's go to Benghazi. Okay, everybody seems to agree. We all agree. Obviously, they screwed up in Benghazi. I mean, saying it over and over again doesn't change the fact because hindsight's 20/20. I mean, it's like anything that happens. It's not supposed to happen, so when it happens, it's obviously a mistake. But there's a reason that they didn't beef up security there. There's a reason they didn't do it, and it's because somebody somewhere along the line, and it isn't just one person. That's another myth. The myth is that one person is making all these decisions. You're dealing with layers and layers of hierarchy and bureaucracy. It gets muddled down. It gets passed on. It's a diffuse array of decision making that goes on. It's not just one person. But here's the last part of the puzzle. They'll always try to find if it seems like somebody's head has to roll, they'll try to find a scapegoat. They'll go on a witch hunt. They'll roll somebody out, and people in power will do everything in their power to avoid from having their view of them tarnished, and that cuts across any political spectrum you want. In fact, it holds true in every walk of life, whether it be a leader of a business, a parent-teacher organization, the head of this, the head of that. I mean, it's just human nature.
So, Peter, let me ask you this. Obamacare. Should Sebelius be cut off at the neck?
I don't believe that. No, I do not. I do not believe that anyone should be cut off at the neck for that. I think that was an incredibly ambitious undertaking. I think it was fraught with all kinds of complexities. I think they're still working the bugs out. But I'm telling you that people can't handle that. They can't handle it. They can't handle the notion that sometimes things just don't work out the way you want them to. They have to demand accountability. They have to have a black and white world. They have to have it easily digestible. And above all else, they need to be able to say, this is your fault. Because that's just the way the people are. They need to have a simple thing to say, you're the reason, and we're going to hold you accountable. Even though it's not true. You know, today's NFL Sunday. There are a bunch of stupid NFL teams playing. Well, you know, 50% of these coaches are going to get fired before the end of the year. Now, that's not to say that the reasons they're getting fired are entirely their fault, but it's their position. They're going to take the hit. That's just the way it works.
You know, that comment reminds me of a line from the movie A Few Good Men. You know, the truth? You can't handle the truth.
Well, people don't want to hear that the color of life is gray. It's not just gray. It's many subtle shades and hues of gray. But people don't want to hear that. They want things to be black or white. And, you know, the truth is gray. In any of these situations, regardless of who's in charge or what's going on, it's never just one thing. It's a collection of events and occurrences and decisions and ramifications. It's ripples and ripples and ripples. If you want to go out on a witch hunt and find somebody to skewer and put their head on a stake, okay, go ahead. Maybe that'll placate you. But it's never just one thing. It's multiple things that add up and result in whatever it is that happened that's tragic and horrible.
There's an old saying. Yeah, you know, that there are always three versions to a story. There's your version, there's my version, and then there's the truth, which lays somewhere in the middle. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I have discovered in my practice and in life and what have you is essentially yes. If you pick a playing card out of a deck, a single playing card out of a deck, if you look at it in one direction, it looks like a rectangle. If you hold it another direction, it looks like a thin line. If you hold it in another direction, you can make it look like a diamond. And this is one of the problems in the world. People know that they can alter the perception of reality by altering the point of view. And the answer, you know, in my line of work, the quest for the truth, pardon me? I'm sorry. In my line of work, the quest for the truth involves as approaching anything from as many different possible angles as you can. Now, you never quite fully get the truth, but you get closer. You get closer. Pursuing the truth is a worthwhile endeavor, but it does require, in my opinion, looking at things from as many different points of view as possible, and then you somehow try to put them all together, and you have to deal with the fact that some of the points of view you're getting are just flat out false. And you've got to be able to ferret out the completely false reports from the reports that may be true but don't sync up with the perception that you're trying to piece together right now. It's a difficult task, but it is worth pursuing, and you definitely get closer to it. And you know, but the truth in the end is what you said, Simon. It's not quite what you thought it was. It's an amalgamation of different things.
Right. And Bill, you've been incredibly quiet. Do you want to chime in on this?
No.
No.
It doesn't seem like there's a really good answer here. But, you know, clearly, I think my biggest concern really is that are we going to try to do something useful to protect places like embassies from being vulnerable? Or are we just going to say, okay, this one was a bad situation and we're going to remain vulnerable? I would like to know from somebody in political power to say, you know what? Based on this situation, we're going to create a panel to review that compounds in vulnerable areas are more secure. But we never hear anybody saying we're going to look into it. And I guess that's what's kind of unnerving about hearing things like this.
Sam, I'm sure you've caught your breath by now. After going 10 rounds with Peter.
A tough guy, believe me, he's a tough guy to argue with, but I love arguing with him and talking to him. I learned so much. Probably, Peter, I hate to go up against you in the courtroom.
Well, to be honest with you, you wouldn't want to go up against me in the courtroom, but here's the trick.
And by the way, can I ask, nor a humbler man have I ever met.
Well, humility happens to be my best quality of many. No, look, there's nothing magical about trying to be a lawyer, but the hard part is trying to be objective and reasonable. And
well, that's why I'd never make it. That's why
you're a very passionate man, and
I'd never make it as a lawyer because I rule by the worst thing in the world, emotion. And the good lawyers I've met, such as you, Manny, some other ones locally, are the most outside the courtroom and this and that. They're a lot of fun on this and that and great. But, boy, when I see them in arguments or hear them in arguments, and it's incredible. You guys are not emotional. You're robots. That's what
no,
you have to be.
It's not entirely true. But you have to struggle, in my opinion. And I think this is true for everyone in life. It's not just lawyer. Being a lawyer has taught me a lot more about life than the other way around, because the law is just a subset of life. Everything that we do is just a subset of life. And the patterns that everyone sees on this so-called macro world level, they all apply to each and every one of us on our micro individual levels every single day. We have our own little fiefdoms and empires that we have to be responsible for, and we shouldn't rush to judgment, and we should try to find the truth, and we should try to be reasonable, and we should try not to let our prejudices get in the way, but we should also recognize that they do, that it's part of being human. They get in the way. I mean, Sam, you've got a guy there, your own flesh and blood son, and God bless him, he's at the tip of the spear. And of course that affects you. It should affect you. It should.
No, I agree. I can't agree with anything you said, and I agree with you. And the situation is, though, I think with the Benghazi situation is, I guess we've come to the point where it's the cover-ups of the cover-ups of the cover-ups, whether it's the Ritz administration or the previous one or the future ones we're going to have, we in the Congress that we don't have, you know, whatever it is, I'm getting sick of it. You know, it's that we pay a lot of money, we, all of us, collectively, for a government that is just doesn't, you know, if it, you know, it doesn't give us a return on our investment. Our tax dollars are being wasted, and more so as we get, we're finding that out, you know, due to the information age and whatnot and leaks and whatnot, that the amount of waste of government money is incredible. And maybe that helps lead to, we don't have enough money to put, because we spend so much money on IRS conferences in Las Vegas, we don't have the security for Benghazi. And that's a sad thing if that's the case, because, you know, the allocation of money, that has to come from the top, but maybe that decision is not being done. But like Peter, you know, the thing, I do agree with you about this Obama thing, about the Obamacare, okay? But someone has to be held accountable, because it wasn't like they only had a day to put this together. They had a couple of years to put this together, I believe 3 years to put this together. They spent boo-hoo amounts of money, and they should have had it. They should have rolled it out better. They should have test marketed it better, and they didn't. And you know why? It's not because they didn't want it to be. I don't believe they wanted it to fail as soon as it started. I agree with it. But I do believe.
I think that's a safe assumption, Sam.
What?
And I think it's a safe assumption they didn't want it to fail as soon as it started.
I don't think they wanted it to fail. But, however, here's where I'm a conspiracy nut. Okay, and this is bad because it kind of comes down to the greed. Okay, it comes down and the people in government, because they're never held accountable, is, do you know Michelle Obama's college roommate company helped design the website? I don't like these connections that we continue to see. Republicans and Democrats, people making boohoo amounts of money for their friends and their families and their close ones. They were involved. There's a connection there. That's bad. And it's almost like, and because of that, and they know there's going to be no accountability, no one's going to look into it, they'll put their spin on it, and everyone will laugh, and the steel gets spread around. Been going on for centuries, okay? I'm getting tired of it. You know, because it's getting worse and worse. It's not getting better. The cleaning up of government and corrupt government, its incestuous relationship with corrupt businesses and corrupt institutions, is getting worse. And it's kind of a bad effect. Sandy Hook, Peter, you talk about that. You talk about all these other things. This whole country, this whole world is going to be up in a revolution. It's going to deal with the fact that historians in the future are going to look back at, you know, there was a time where this great government, the United States, wealthiest country in the world, had all this power and all the right things to do things, along with other countries. There was all sorts of monies and to be spread around to take care of things, and all they did was take care of very little. They only could care about stealing as much as they could for themselves, and the gap in the wealth is worse than it's ever been. That's pissing people off. I understand that. People are getting angrier. They're working harder. So I don't understand a mentally challenged person taking a gun and killing kids. I'll never understand that, Peter. But what we're going to start seeing are more and more people getting guns and shooting people out of anger, frustrations, robberies, and whatnot because of what's happening. And
isn't that what we just saw at LAX? I mean, isn't that what just happened?
I don't know what the cause of that one was yet. I wasn't.
Well,
really,
this guy was a professed so-called patriot, and he hated government, and he shot a 38-year-old TSA guard because he hated government.
Okay, so, yeah, you're going to see stuff of that. Now, he wasn't a guy hearing voices or anything. He just decided he declared war on the government.
I think it's a little early to draw those conclusions, but by all accounts...
At least we forget, do you remember not that long ago, the police officer in your neck of the woods, Peter, who got hated what was going on? He declared war against the police, remember?
In my opinion, I define, you know, mental illness very broadly. I think that anybody who would do these things is suffering from some form of mental illness. Now, I'm not saying it excuses them or justifies them. It doesn't mean they should get the death penalty. But to me, there's a certain sickness in the world, and it does concern me. And, you know, we worry so much about things that, I mean, I'm concerned about the really, really big picture. I'm concerned about, you know, is humanity going to kill itself? Are we going to destroy ourselves? How are we ever going to maintain any level of cohesion? You know, people talk about America like it's such a great empire. America has existed for about 250 years. Empires existed for thousands of years and came and went. I mean, the seeds of our own destruction are starting to emerge, and it's a process that repeats itself over and over and over again. I worry about just the health and safety of humanity. I really do. I just want to see us live in a world that's reasonably healthy, reasonably at peace, reasonably free from toxicity and poisons and the threat of mental health concerns, but it's a losing battle because the forces that create all these problems are so far beyond any individual's control, and they're mounting: greed, corruption, power, wealth, influence, and it cuts across all sectors. And I don't know what to do about it. I don't think there is a cure, but I think something awful's coming. And it's, you know, I don't know when it's going to come, and I don't know what it's going to be. And you can talk now about safeguarding all the embassies in the world, but I think that the real big threat is something around the corner that we haven't even seen yet. 9-1-1, nobody saw that coming, and they did it. They tried to attack that building before, and nobody still saw it coming.
Peter, I seriously think you should run for president.
I would be the worst president. I would be the worst president on earth, and I'll tell you why, gentlemen. As you all know, I'm a lousy politician. I don't say the right things. I don't do the right things. Sometimes I'm mean and nasty, and I talk too much, and I apologize for that from the bottom of my heart. But
John Perry will ditto you on that one.
He's got a right to be angry with me. I apologize. I get into it sometimes. People used to accuse me of being too nice. Can you believe that? And now look at me. I'm a monster. This is what the world's done to me. What can I say? I apologize from the bottom of my heart. But I'm just fed up with everything. I don't know what to do about it anymore.
Peter, run for office.
Don't be ridiculous. That'd be the worst election. I'm never running for anything.
We'll
I don't belong
the,
in politics.
Be your brain trust.
Hey, Peter, run if somebody says run for office. Run for
that. I'm incapable of being elected to anything. I'm too damn opinionated, and I piss off too many people.
And we also know about all the skeletons in your closet.
And I got a lot of skeletons in my closet, too, and I freely admit that, although I'll never admit what they are.
I'm looking at the clock. We're just about to wind the program up. So I want to go once around the table and get everyone's final thoughts. Bill, I'm going to start with you because you haven't said much today.
No, I started out pretty good, but it's all been kind of above my head, and it was starting to feel a little pointless that we didn't fix this one. I mean, there was a lot of shows we were able to feel pretty smug that we fixed all the problems of the world, and we didn't on this one. So I feel pretty bad about that. But it's kind of like one of my favorite quotes of all time. You know, if you can see the aliens in the UFO, it's already too late. And I kind of feel like we're there.
Good one. Okay. Well, either of you.
Go ahead, Peter. You go.
Let I want to weigh in because Sam deserves the last word. Several major rants from yours truly today. My apologies, and I agree with what Bill just said. I mean, it is exhausting and exasperating, and you know, I don't know if we can solve any of these problems. And I think like what Sam said is true that sometimes the only form of accountability that we've got, the only way to hold anybody accountable is to talk about it and hold them accountable, and just keep working from there. Sometimes that's all we got, so we got to make the most of it.
Sam?
Thank you for the opportunity. Enjoyed it immensely. I'm sorry if I got a little long-winded, but my passion sometimes gets the most of me, and that's a bad thing, and it's a good thing. Simon, I wish you a happy birthday tomorrow. I hope Jen makes you a big cake and you have a lot of fun with that. And if the Browns are winning, they'll probably that means end up losing. And that was it. And all I can tell everybody is if venting is the only thing we can do and it makes you feel better, please vent away because I do it.
I want to thank all of you for joining me today. And I'm sure we'll be back next Sunday. Until then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. Till next time, goodbye.